federalnewsradio.com.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Interfacing complete. Please stand by. Now downloading Tech Talk Radio with Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ. Tech Talk Radio, it's technology you can understand. And now, here are Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ.
Welcome to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. I'm Dr. Richard Schertz.
And I'm Jim Russ.
And it's been a great week in technology, and I particularly love the weather.
Yeah.
And all the swimming pools are open. Have you ever noticed what a nerd does when he goes to the swimming pool? You know, because I'm always looking for all of the techie nerds.
He probably plays with all of his tech toys,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. See, when a nerd goes to the swimming pool, he sits there at the pool out in the sun playing with his iPhone or playing with his smartphone.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Or else they might have a laptop there doing a little bit of coding on the side. And then people, you know, kind of ignore him. And occasionally he'll put away all of his toys and go into the pool. And so I try to be non-nerdish when I go to the pool.
So what do you do when you go to the pool?
I hide my iPhone so people can't see me looking at it. So I appear to be non-nerdish. But I have to say, when we were sailing in Spain, I didn't even take anything with me.
I was going to say, I bet you probably couldn't have used it.
Well, it was amazing. The iPhone signal was quite strong even 3 miles out.
Really?
I was quite surprised, huh. And so I actually had great iPhone connection 3 miles out. Now, here's the problem. When you're on a sailboat, they turn off all the electrical systems to save the battery, and so I couldn't charge my iPhone, so my iPhone was always dead. So what I actually needed for that, and I'm going to make this a tech talk topic in the future. I needed a solar charger for my iPhone,
mm-hmm.
So I could, you know, put it out in the sun and let it charge up for a couple of hours, and that would be the way it would go. This week we are going to feature the man who was behind the architecture of the original PC, the IBM PC, and he did a spin out and he started the first company that was devoted to thin client. He's probably the first, what you could say, the first cloud type company, which is Citrix. And he died last week, sadly, at a young age. And I thought I would feature him this week, Ed Iacobucci. And he was really quite a pioneer in technology. I'm going to talk a little bit on the show this week about the technical interview. Companies are deciding that they need to do a different type of technical interview. The type that had been done, the traditional technical interview, simply is not a good predictor of what would work. And smartphones are taking over Africa in terms of cash transactions. Cash is almost obsolete in many African countries, many developing countries, yeah.
Hmm.
And so it's quite interesting. And we'll talk a bit about the DARPA Robotics Challenge. They had some great news this week on that. That's an interesting project because they're using open source robotic software. And, of course, it was a huge mailbag.
In your mailbox.
Yeah, let me get it. Yeah. Oh,
that was amazing.
I tell you, I'm going to have to start, you know, going to the gym to, you know, get this mailbag up here.
I think
here.
Maybe you should bring a Stratford intern with you is what you should do.
Oh, yeah.
To schlep the mailbag.
Now, listen, why can't we have Mr. Big Voice put the mailbag on? Is it a union deal?
I believe the union would get involved in that because it claims there's no heavy lifting.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
He might have a problem with
yeah,
that.
Yeah, that's a typical union issue.
We
got an email from Alex. Dear Tech Talk. Frequently, my mouse will stop responding. Anything that I do will lock up my computer, and then I've got to reboot the computer. What's the problem? Thanks, Alex. Well, Alex, it could be that your computer's locking up for other reasons, but I'm going to assume that it's not your computer, that it's actually the mouse connection. Now, as you know, it's a wireless mouse, as he was, I forgot that word in his letter. It's a wireless mouse. Now, the first thing that I do when my wireless mouse begins to behave erratically, I changed the battery.
Ah, good point.
Because there's a little, there's a AA battery in it. I changed the battery. It doesn't last, you know, indefinitely. It lasts a couple of months. I always, in fact, if the battery goes out, the mouse is gone. I always carry an extra battery with me when I'm traveling.
That would be the nerdy thing to do.
That is the nerdy thing to do. And one time I carried two extra batteries with me, and I was stopped by the TSA at the airport because they said, this is really excessive battery carrying, and there may be some, you may have some kind of secret device there with two batteries.
But that machete you have is perfectly okay.
Yeah, that's right. But the so I only carry one battery because I really don't like being stopped.
No.
Now the second.
Well, can't you get batteries when you travel abroad?
You can. But I'm a man who likes instant gratification.
Okay. All
and right. When my mouse goes dead,
you want to be ready.
I want to put it boom.
It's like
and get
a NASCAR
it.
Pit stop.
That's right. Mm-hmm. I don't want to, because I am all into high efficiency, high productivity on my laptop because I'm the nerdy nerd.
But not at the pool.
No, not at the pool.
Or at least a nerd undercover.
That's right. Now the second problem with your wireless mouse could be you've got a weak signal. And that could be, you could have all kinds of interference effects. You know, like you've got a wireless telephone in your house.
Ooh.
If your wireless telephone is sitting near your mouse, it could provide interference.
No kidding.
Yeah, if your Wi-Fi router's there, it could provide interference. So anything that's around there would cause interference, kind of move it away. Now, if it's actually a weak signal, there's normally a little USB dongle, as they say.
One of my favorite tech words.
Dongle,
ever.
Yes. Sounds.
It's fun to say.
It is fun to say dongle. How's your dongle today? Anyway,
that's not where I was going.
Anyway, it's a small dongle that actually connects to the mouse wirelessly. And so what you may want to do is move the mouse closer to the dongle and see whether that improves the signal. And you could take the mouse and you could start backing away from the dongle to see at what point does the mouse stop functioning. Kind of gives you a signal strength item. More than likely, it's some kind of electrical interference. And I'd say putting your your home wireless telephone nearby could cause a problem. Now the third thing you could do, and probably the least likely thing, is make certain that you've got the most updated device driver. So you could go either to your you probably want to look at the manufacturer of your wireless mouse and simply go to their website and download the latest device driver for your particular operating system. That's what I do. Now, if none of that works, just get a mouse with a USB connection and plug it into the computer. And then if your computer still locks up, I'm going to say it's another problem. And so you can write back next week if that happens. Because I only answer one question at a time. Okay, we got an email from Sue in Reston. Dear Doc, Windows XP... Will Windows XP keep working after the support ends? I love my XP machine. It does everything that I need, and I don't want to change it. Thanks, Sue. Well, I'll tell you, a lot of people love Windows XP because it was a great system, Windows XP. And then, of course, after Windows XP, they had Windows Vista, which nobody liked. And so a lot of people grew to know and love their Windows XP operating system. But then after Windows Vista came out, Windows 7 came out, which also was a very stable operating system. People loved it. So, but I understand why you just love your Windows XP. Well, the good news is your Windows XP will keep working after they stop supporting it. The only thing that happens when support ends is that you no longer receive bug fixes and patches and vulnerability fixes. They'll no longer be sent to you. What you've got now is what it will be forever. So make certain that you've got all the latest updates. Make certain you've got everything updated because there eventually those updates won't be available. So make certain that you get them all, install them, and get everything that you can get from them before they turn it off. Now, there's really no harm in continuing to run Windows XP with one exception, which is what we're calling the unpatched vulnerabilities. When somebody discovers an exploit or bug in the software that could be exploited by malware writers to insert or cause malware to be installed in your machine, you've got a problem. And if you're not getting an update to close the hole, that vulnerability will remain there forever. forever. Now, if you've got anti-malware software running, that's going to probably protect you from most of those attempted intrusions. But now the catch is, how long will anti-malware software be available that supports XP? And that I really don't know. Now, there is one good factor. As XP has a declining market share, chances are that the authors of malware are going to focus their efforts on the new operating systems like Windows 7 and Windows 8. So you might be safe, just because actually nobody cares about Windows XP anymore. So you could continue as long as you want if you... and actually, I have to admit, I did like Windows XP. It was pretty fast.
Yeah,
it was snappy.
It was.
I really did like it, and I hated Vista. But Windows 7 is now, I'm now a convert to Windows 7. I'm quite happy with Windows 7, and I have not moved to Windows 8. I really don't care for it so much. We got an email from Knock in Ohio. This is from the famous Ohio clan.
The Ohio clan with the pictures that are... questionable.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Dear Tech Talk, why does my browser warn me only secure content is displayed? This is not on every web page, but just sometimes.
I think I know
the
why.
Okay, Jim.
I could hazard a guess.
No, it's not what you're thinking.
She's not because she's going to dangerous places?
No, it's not what you're thinking.
Okay.
No, it's not what you're thinking at all.
Is there a problem with her dongle?
No. Nothing wrong. No problem. No problem with the dongle at all. The issue here. Okay, I've got to get back on track.
I'm sorry.
Please, Jim. I must get back on track here. This is a technology show.
It's not a comedy show.
A comedy show.
God, we all know that, don't we?
Okay, this is the deal. When you download a web page, there's something called HTTPS, where you actually fetch files and other information using an encrypted data stream. The S stands for secure. HTTPS stands for secure. Now, the reason that you do HTTPS is that you don't want people between you and the server you're talking to be able to intercept your signals and see what you're saying. You'd like to have an encrypted data stream. And so HTTPS is very good for emails and various things that you want to keep private. Now, the unencrypted web protocol is HTTP without the S, and that's not encrypted. Now, sometimes websites, which are not written extremely well, will give you HTTPS in the written for most of the material that they're giving you, but they might pull in a picture from another website and deliver the picture by HTTP, so it's not encrypted. In which case, the web page has mixed information. Some HTTPS, which cannot be seen by intermediate nodes on the internet, and HTTP, which can be seen. So if the pictures, say, for instance, are being delivered with HTTP unencrypted, people could look at what you're looking at, and they might not see the text because it's encrypted, but they could see what pictures you're looking at. Maybe that is a problem.
Mm-hmm, sure. Could be.
And so what it does, the web browser, if you've got mixed usage, it will give you a warning. It'll say, displaying HTTPS only. And so it will only display the encrypted or the secure information and not the unencrypted. Unless you say, go ahead and give it all to me, encrypted and non-encrypted. Which is what I usually do, because it's not really that big of a deal in general. Now, mm-hmm. if you don't like that warning signal, and you got, say, Internet Explorer, you can go to Tools and then Internet Options and then Advanced. And under Advanced, you go down, you look under Security, and you scroll down. It's a whole big list of things. And then you uncheck the item called Block Unsecured Images with Other Mixed Content. You uncheck that, and then you won't get that warning. That was a good question, because a lot of people see that and they really don't know what it means, and they just say, well, give me all the website, and they don't. Excellent question, Knock. I mean, so she's really watching what she gets off the internet very carefully. We got an email from Leslie in Richmond. Dear Tech Talk, I'd like to get in touch with my old college roommate. How do I find her email address? Thanks, Leslie. Well, finding someone's email address, Leslie, is, you know, pretty difficult.
Yeah.
And, you know, not everybody wants to be found, and it's easy
sure.
to set up a free email account with information that has nothing to do with who you really are. People like anonymity on the website. So even if you know a lot about the person who you're trying to find, they may not be findable in terms of email. Now, the first thing I like to do is go to Google. Because Google's, you know, stores up all kinds of it. So, like, if you would Google me, you'd find all kinds of stuff because there's a lot of stuff about me on the internet. You could probably track me down. So there may be some items that are available on Google. Sometimes Google even has, you know, your home address. It could pop up unless you don't want that to be known, and you could have Google not display that. Now, if you suspect they may have an account like MSN or a Hotmail account or Yahoo account or Facebook, you might go to each of those different services and do a search for their name, and then you're searching that particular database. Then finally, there are pay-for services where you can pay for somebody. So, you know, one time I had to look up someone from a long time ago, and I needed to contact them, and I didn't know how to do it. And I went to the paid services. The nice thing is that you can do the search, and they give you enough information so you know that they actually have identified the correct person. But they don't give you anything specific enough to act on. So then you pay them like $9.95 or something for 30 days worth of use, and then you can look it up. And actually, in my case, it worked really well. It just depends on how – because these paid searches tend to look at public records. So they'll look at, for instance – when someone sells a house or buys a house, they'll look at birth records, so they'll have children. And so you can track children, you can check buying and selling of houses. So you can really track somebody as they're going
criminal on. Records.
criminal records. And so it's basically all public records that are available, and they search them, and actually it works quite well. So, you know, I don't know what your chances are here, but good luck.
Yep.
We got an email from Donna. Dear Doc and Jim, how do I stop my home page from changing? It's annoying to keep having to change it back. Love the show. Donna in Kansas. She must be a streaming user, you know, stream over the internet. Or she could be a podcast.
Sure.
Well, if your home page keeps changing after you've set it, then I would suspect it's been malware. Because, you know, they install malware on your machine, and they like to send you to a particular site that they make money on. That's the whole idea. Now, a home page is nothing more than the web page that automatically opens when you launch your browser or you hit the home button. And you can go to settings, and you can set your home page for whatever you want. For our purposes, let's just say you've properly set the home page and then something's changing it. Now, a couple of things could be happening. Malware could be changing your home page without your permission. So you want to download the latest version of a malware program and scan your computer. If you don't have any good ones, a good free option is AVG. You can download AVG at avg.com. They have both a paid and a free version. I like to use ESET on my computer. They've got only a paid version for around $39. Now, another thing that could cause the home page to change is when you install certain software or updates on the computer. So, like I've noticed, if you install, say you might do an update on Apple iTunes, and they might say, "Do you want to change your home page to Apple?" So I always, whenever I'm downloading an update on software, I always make certain that I uncheck all those boxes at the bottom, because they're always like, can we mail you stuff?
There's
a lot
of
your homepage. There's a lot of stuff. Can we download our special toolbar? So I uncheck all of those so I don't get any unexpected things.
Sure.
And so it could be that that's your cause too. We got an email from Craig in Oakton. Dear Doc, does my information get deleted from the cloud if I delete it from the associated software or computer? In my case, it would be LastPass or Norton Identity Safe. I'm now using Norton Identity Safe. If I delete LastPass from my computer, do my passwords get deleted from the cloud, or are they on the computer, or are they on the cloud forever, and where are they on the computer? Love the show, Craig. Okay, let me explain what this is. I have a small aside. LastPass is a way to store your passwords. So, you know, you've got, say, 20 passwords. They're all different. And this is a place where you can encrypt them all and save them in one location. And with just one password, you can open up the list in LastPass and see all your passwords. It's a good way to have, it's a good password management program. And LastPass is set up so that when you store the encrypted list on your computer, it uploads it to the cloud, to the servers at LastPass. And then if you go to another computer and log into LastPass from that other computer, it will download the list to that other computer, and you'll have access to your passwords there. So no matter where you are, you can take a look at your passwords. So I mean, if you go to a public computer, you may not want to download lists, but you just look at it on the cloud. So it resides on every computer where you've installed LastPass, as well as on the cloud. So clearly, if you simply delete LastPass from one computer, it's going to still remain on the cloud, because they're thinking, well, you're going to go to another computer and install LastPass. You're going to want to get all your passwords downloaded. So the only way to get rid of the list of passwords in the LastPass cloud servers or the central servers is to actually delete your account. So you got to log into your LastPass account on the central servers and delete your account, and then it's gone. And then you got to go to each one of the computers and delete it there. So that's kind of the trick there. It's not too complicated, but you've got to watch it. And I'm glad you're thinking about that, because of all this privacy stuff going on. It's always an issue. Now, the good thing with LastPass, all your passwords are encrypted, and it's a pretty strong encryption. It'll be hard to get at them very easily.
Good.
So there you go. We love your emails.
We do.
Email us at techtalk@stratford.edu. We'll answer them at the radio show. Also, we're monitoring the Facebook page. Go to facebook.com/techtalkonline. And we love you to download the podcast. You can go to techtalkonline.com and get the podcast, or you can go to Apple iTunes and download the podcast. And we love all your ratings there if you go to Apple iTunes.
And, of course, this is Saturday morning, and you're listening to Tech Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, and 107.7 FM HD2. We'll be back with more right after this.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
Application and software developers shape our world. Those who design and build these systems are the leaders we follow. The School of Computer Information Systems at Stratford University's Tysons Corner or Woodbridge campus offers programs with a real-world, hands-on education. In fact, many of today's Stratford IT grads are working in their chosen field. Make it work for you. Stratford University. Get working. Check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu. A rewarding future as a holistic caregiver or nurse practitioner. Combining the art of caring with the human science makes nursing today's breakout field. Stratford University's School of Nursing at the Tysons Corner or Woodbridge campus offers a patient-centered approach with valuable core clinical training. Stratford provides a real-world education in nursing. In fact, many of today's Stratford nursing grads are working in their chosen fields. Make it work for you. Get working. Check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. And now it is time for
Profiles in IT.
Yes, today we're going to be talking about Edward E. Iacobacci. What do you think of that? Iacobacci.
That'll work for
Iacobacci.
Me. Okay.
Okay, thank you very much. Edward Iacobacci is an American businessman who co-founded, among other things, Citrix Systems. Ed was born in Buenos Aires, Argentina, September 26, 1953. His father was a biochemist, and he moved his family to the U.S. in 1960 to work for E.R. Squibb and Sons, and then for Coca-Cola. Robert Goizueta, who was then the chairman of Coca-Cola, became a close family friend, and he ultimately became Ed's godfather. So Ed was connected to high-level business people from the beginning. Both men, his father and the chairman of the Coca-Cola, strongly influenced Iacobacci's business ethos. Ed graduated from Georgia Tech with a B.S. in systems engineering. In 1979, he immediately began a career at IBM. Now, his career at IBM initially was involved with the development of IBM DOS, the disk operating system, and OS 2, operating system 2, which was designed to be a follow-on to Windows that ultimately failed. He was lead of the IBM Microsoft design team that developed the first IBM personal computer. Now, if you remember back then, IBM used to do, they would develop all of their components internally. They would actually always, you know, every single component, they would never outsource anything. Everything was like part of the IBM ecosystem. And they wanted to do something extremely innovative. And so they started this Skunkworks project down in Boca Raton, Florida. And they put these guys together. They said, look, we want you to invent an IBM personal computer that is going to use outside components, put them together, and we want this thing shipped very quickly. So this team down at Boca Raton, they worked with Microsoft, and they got and they had Microsoft develop the disk operating system for the PC. They used outside components, and they designed standards. They had a bus, what they call the ISA bus, which then all these cards would slip in, and they designed an architecture that was easily produced, and it could be made by almost any company because it was a standard architecture, and so it was ultimately would be possible to make a very low-cost PC. And that was the beginning of the IBM PC, and Ed led that effort. But then in the 80s, during the 80s, Ed became convinced that the thin client was better for PC operating system because they could save businesses much time and expense. You see, the IBM PC and all Windows environment, everything, they're called the what they call the thick client. You've got everything right there. You do all your processing right there. You don't really use any central servers for anything. And Ed thought it would make a lot more sense to centralize the processing and then just deliver what had to be displayed to the end user in their thin client. And many people thought this was a step backwards, going back to the old dumb terminal with the Unix central PC, and they said, this guy is out to lunch. Well, in 1989, Ed left IBM and co-founded Citrix System to implement his vision of computer-based computing. And this was really, he was really sort of the thought leader that brought us cloud computing, because everything now in this cloud computing, you've got your processors are centrally controlled on the cloud, and they just deliver things to a thin client or to an internet computer. And mm-hmm. So this was kind of the beginning of the whole cloud computing idea with remote processing. Now, Ed's vision for Citrix has revolved around server-centric, multi-user computing, what we now call virtual hosted desktops, or sometimes called the virtual desktop infrastructure. In fact, we're at Stratford, we're moving to that across the board over the next year or so. It really saves time. What happened was companies began to realize that these thick clients that were deployed all over the country were just hard to maintain because you'd have to update each one of them. It was difficult to control them centrally, and there was a large deployment cost related to these things. And the virtual desktops are much easier to maintain. So just because of the cost of operating, companies have sort of migrated back to that. Now, he led the company as chairman and chief technology officer through all its market and product development. Iacobucci forged a 5-year joint development agreement with Microsoft to include Citrix multi-user capabilities within the Microsoft Windows NT server. He actually got a license agreement to actually modify the core code for the Windows NT server. It's quite an accomplishment. Now, Microsoft, when that 5-year agreement was up, they cut him out, and they didn't let him be part of any future development, but he managed to work around that. In 1998, he received the Ernst & Young International Entrepreneur of the Year Award. I mean, that's a big deal because you get your regional Entrepreneur of the Year Award, then you get your National Entrepreneur of the Year Award, which he won, and then all the national winners go to a central location, and then they compete against each other, and then he won that competition to become the international or the world Entrepreneur of the Year. I mean, that's a huge accomplishment. He served as Citrix chairman through the year 2000 when the stock crashed because they projected a reduction in revenues. Mm-hmm. You see what was happening. Microsoft was going to cut them out of future Windows NT work. Now, he ended up negotiating a licensing agreement with Microsoft where they would actually where they would actually use Citrix. It wasn't a core part of the NT server, but it was an add-on that they recommended. And so he was able to continue using Citrix and then that way. And so the company did continue to grow, but there was a stock crash. And ultimately, his vision of thin client computing was vindicated, and now the company is very robust, even though they had that kind of stock crash in 2000. Now, in 2002, he founded another company, which was kind of his passion. He founded DayJet Corporation, which was an on-demand airline service that sold individual seats. Because, you know, many companies can't afford their own corporate jet, but maybe you could have a corporate jet-like behavior. You could just get individual seats. You'd pay more for them. And by organizing with very sophisticated software on-demand delivery, he might be able to put together an innovative business model. And he was really excited about that. And he continued. His team built a computer system for highly complex optimization problems for on-demand air service. They got a 5-year agreement with the FAA to pioneer the next generation air transportation technologies. But in 2008, just 6 years after it started, he had to quit. He could no longer secure capital. This was about the time of all the crash,
right?
And things weren't going too well. Nobody wanted it. Apparently, it wasn't making money. They didn't want to invest any more money in it. So it went out of business. In 2009, he co-founded another company, Virtual Works Group. Now, this was a company that helped manage data across many platforms. At one point, he described the vision of this company as content virtualization. So you'd have your content spread across many platforms, but it would look as just one data set. So it was like content virtualization. It didn't matter where it resided. You could still see it as a cloud of content. And this was a play on the words of desktop virtualization, which Citrix had pioneered. Ed was the kind of guy who would visualize things that people said really weren't possible. I mean, and then he would make them happen. He did that with the IBM architecture and the way they put together that group in Boca Raton. He did it with Citrix, and then he was doing it again, yet again with Virtual Works. Iacobucci served as president and CEO until May 20th, 2013, when he stepped down for health reasons. He died last week, June 21st, 2013, and is survived by his wife and 3 children. He is known in the industry as one of the nicest entrepreneurs there. He was a nice guy. Everybody liked him, and everyone respected his forward-thinking vision. And I just wanted to feature him this week because he died last week.
Timely.
Yes.
Very good. Hope you're paying attention, because, Doc, people will have a chance to capitalize on their knowledge in just a few minutes when we play the pop quiz here on Federal News Radio on 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2, and 103.5 FM HD2. More of Tech Talk right after this.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
Technology is constantly changing. An effective IT manager must not only understand the possibilities and limitations of the technology, but also the requirements and constraints of the business world. Enhance your career today with a master's degree from Stratford University School of Computer Information Systems. Classes are offered day, evening, and weekends to match your busy schedule and are taught by experienced faculty members with industry experience. Earn your master's degree in as little as 15 months with an accelerated program in software engineering, information systems, information assurance, or telecommunications. Learn more about earning your master's degree from Stratford University at stratford.edu or call 1-800-444-0804. Disclose statements available at stratford.edu/disclosures. Stratford University, 1-800-444-0804.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers, here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
It's time for Washington's most popular and longest-running radio game show, the Stratford University Pop Quiz. Now, here's your host and star of our show. No, it's not Gene Rayburn. It's not Alex Trebek. It's not Richard Dawson. It's Dr. Richard Schertz.
Welcome back to the classroom of the airwaves.
Indeed it is.
Otherwise known as Tech Talk Radio. And, of course, when there is a classroom, there must be an assessment.
What you can't see is the stern look on Doctor's face right now.
Yes, I believe in assessment, and I believe in very strict assessments.
Mm-hmm.
In this case, it's going to be our pop quiz. If you get the correct answer to the pop quiz, not only do you get an A-plus for the day, you win two tickets to fine dining at the Escoffier Dining Room or the Karim Dining Room, either at Woodbridge or Falls Church. Earlier in the show, I was talking about Edward E. Iacobucci. He, of course, is the co-founder of Citrix and one of the driving forces behind the development of the IBM PC. After he left Citrix because the stock had dumped in the year 2000, what company did he start? If you get the correct answer to that, you will win two tickets to fine dining. Now, how can they reach us, Jim?
Well, you know, it's a very simple thing to do, and that would be to pick up the phone. If you're calling from west of Buenos Aires, Argentina, it's 877-936-9333. If you're calling from east of Boca Raton, Florida, it's 877-936-9333. And, of course, the wild card line for everybody else is 877-936-9333. 9333.
Now, if you're calling from Siberia, you can reach us using Skype. Simply go to Tech Talk Radio 1, and that connection will be forwarded directly to the studio, free of charge.
Okay, so while we wait for the phones to light up, and they are actually, let's talk about something else.
Let's talk about the website of the week.
Okay.
Coffee-tivity. You combine coffee with productivity, and you get Coffee-tivity.
That's a good idea.
Coffee-tivity.com. Cafe noise boosts productivity. And there's a reason that coffee houses are packed with patrons wielding laptops, and all they have there is free Wi-Fi. Studies suggest that working amid clinking cups and cloud chatter increases productivity and enables us to think outside the box. If you go to that website, Jim, you can play the music. I don't know if we can get it on the air.
I'll get that on the air, yeah. Hang on.
We're going to do a little
show
production
and tell.
Show and tell here. Studies, but for those who can't afford to languish all day drinking $5 cups of coffee... you can actually bring the coffee shop experience into your kitchen or into your cubicle with a free digital soundtrack that simulates cafe noise. The site is called Coffee-tivity, and it was inspired by recent research showing the whoosh of espresso machines and caffeinated clatter, typical in most coffee shops, create the right level of background noise to stimulate creativity. I mean, there's real data behind this. The website, which is free, plays an ambient coffee shop soundtrack that, according to researchers, helps people concentrate. Now, in a series of experiments that looked at the effect of noise on creative thinking, researchers at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign had participants brainstorm for new ideas while they were exposed to a varying levels of background noise. The results were published in the Journal of Consumer Research, found that a level of ambient noise typical of a bustling coffee shop or a television playing in a living room of about 70 decibels enhanced performance compared with a relatively quiet 50 decibels. The site's creators are now working on creating custom cafe soundtracks for specific countries, like plugging in a few Aussie twangs for listeners down under. You see, they found out that the Aussies actually hate American accent. You can go to the website to check this out, coffeetivity.com, coffeetivity.com.
Now, you'll have to do this on your own. This will be a homework project because we're having a JavaScript issue with the computer.
A JavaScript issue
Isn't
with the computer.
Great?
It is just a shame. I don't know what's going on. Maybe you don't have sufficient permission or
Apparently
something.
Apparently not. I do not have administrator permission to do that.
I think that is exactly
that
the problem.
That is just so sad that we can't share that today.
And I'm disappointed that my co-host is such a lowly ranked person here at the studio, but I'll just have to live with it.
But I think with your help, things could change.
Yeah.
Things about to change for our listener. He's about to become a big winner, I have a funny feeling. Let's go to line number two. This is Ken calling from Gaithersburg, Maryland. Ken, good morning, and how are you?
Fine, how are you?
Good. Dr. Schertz, go ahead and ask the question,
yes,
please.
Yes, early in the show, we were talking about Ed Iacobucci, who was the co-founder of Citrix and the architect of the IBM PC. What company did he found after he left Citrix because of the stock crash in the year 2000?
Dayjet Corporation.
That is correct! Woo-hoo! Two tickets to Vine Dining, the Escoffier Dining Room, or the Karim Dining Room. I tell you, I love all those sound effects.
You like that?
Oh, isn't
that, it really classes up the joint.
It
even
really
as lowly ranked as I am. Ken, thank you very much for listening. Thank you for calling. Hang on the phone. Andrew Mitchell, our vice president of prize distribution, is going to get the phone now, and he'll get those prizes right out to you. This is Tech Talk Radio, and you're listening on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2. And we'll be right back with more after this.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
Budget analyst, a vice president of sales. These are today's business leaders, and a degree from Stratford University's Tyson's Corner or Woodbridge campus offers you a powerful path to navigate the corporate world. The School of Business Administration at Stratford University offers both bachelor's and master's degree programs for a real-world education. In fact, many of today's Stratford business grads are working in their chosen fields. Make it work for you. Get working. Check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu. An executive chef at a trendy restaurant, a hotel general manager at a prestigious resort. These are the high-profile positions in the culinary arts and hospitality management industry. Get working towards your bachelor's or master's degree at Stratford University's Tyson's Corner or Woodbridge campus. In fact, many of today's Stratford culinary arts and hospitality grads are working in their chosen fields. Make it work for you. Get working. Check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We're in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. And there was an interesting article in TechCrunch, "The Technical Interview Should Be Dead." The entire technical interview process, as traditionally performed, has been found not to be effective. Now, this was the fundamental concept of the traditional tech interview. You bring some guy into the room, you know, like an interrogation. You grill him on the spot for some technical questions that must be answered without looking at any resources. Then you have him go to a whiteboard and challenge him to write some code. And you might give them a brain teaser, which is what Google liked to do.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it turns out that this process is a very, very poor predictor of future performance. Somebody who can come in there and perform like that may not necessarily be able to solve real problems in the real world. Now, here's a better way for hiring technical people, as laid out in TechCrunch. First of all, you quickly filter out the technically inept by asking just a few basic questions, even before the interview. You know, you just, not really simple ones, but you just get rid of the people that don't know anything. Then you call them up, or else you bring them in for a face-to-face interview, and you talk about technical problems that they've faced or tools they use, decisions that they've made, and their pet peeves. You're discussing technical concepts. You're not grilling them about how to write a particular line of code. But what you're trying to do is you're trying to find out how they solved the problem, how they approached it, what tools they used, and it's really behavioral interviewing. You say, when you've discovered this, what did you do that? You ask them questions so you can see how they actually operated in the past. You ask them to discuss their past projects, how they got them done, the decisions they had to make, how they made the decisions. You might have them walk you through some of the code that they wrote so you can see their thinking behind it. Now, don't hire anybody who hasn't done anything. See, that's the trouble with these other kind of grillings. You might find somebody that's just great on as a performer, but they actually haven't done anything. So they haven't done anything if they don't have a portfolio to talk about. They don't have any side pet projects. Just skip them. They're not worth it. Then the next thing is you want to look for the cultural fit. You know, we're talking about work culture, enterprise versus startup. I mean, we're not talking about getting people like you. Well, do you like to go out for a beer on Friday nights? You're not trying to get a cultural fit mm-hmm. socially. You're trying to get a cultural fit within the business sure. environment. Then finally, if you've gotten this far in the process, you give them an audition project. You give them some small project, which isn't critical, but if it works, it'll be something that they'll actually shift or be used. You hire them on a paid basis for a week or two to build it. You keep a close eye on them while they write their code and do the progress. And if you do pair programming, have them pair with one of your existing team. At that point, you can hire them or not hire them.
I sense you were having some.
Did we get Coffeetivity
up? We do. So I thought maybe it would help you with your concentration.
Thank you.
If it sounds like you're in a coffee
yeah.
shop.
This process is better for everyone. The employers learn far more about a potential employees. They don't waste time on interviews. They get they give people an excuse that gives them an excuse to pay people to do all those little things that otherwise might not get done. The only problem is it's difficult to scale. Google, for instance, would need to find thousands of one-week audition projects, but that's a small problem. This also ties into the way I've recommended that people prepare for a job. You actually have to do something.
Well, there you go.
You don't really have to have a job to get experience. You work on pet projects at home. You install an Apache web server. You install Linux. You write a little PHP website. You actually have to have a pet project. You join user groups. You do something. And then in an interview such as this, you'll be very successful. That's why with all of our software engineering students, we've got capstone projects. We have things they actually do. So when they go out for the job interview, they can talk about what they have actually done. And so I think this is a very, very valid article, and it gives you an idea of how to prepare for a job and how to get out of the conundrum of what comes first, the job or the experience. You get the experience on your own with tech projects. It doesn't have to be paid.
It was awfully noisy in that coffee shop. So we stepped outside. So
yeah, let's go back in. So you go to coffeetivity.com. Let's listen to that again.
Okay.
We're going to go back in the coffee shop. Now, so if you're working at home and you want to get that coffee shop buzz because you want to have high productivity, you can just turn on the coffee shop. Now, we're having a little technical problem now.
Let's see. Here we go.
It's coming.
We're getting it on the iPad because
here we go.
There we go.
Oh yeah, hear that? Oh yeah. Oh, I can feel the creative juices beginning to flow.
Would you like a latte?
Can't you feel that? Yeah.
I get you a croissant and a latte.
Yeah, I think I'd take a little latte and a croissant would be really nice. You know, maybe a bagel with the cream cheese. Yeah, I'm beginning to feel the creative juices. The code is beginning to come out of me now.
But that's true, don't you think? Because when you try to work at home, there's so many distractions when you're by yourself.
That's right.
When you're in an atmosphere like that, it's really easier perhaps to concentrate.
It is. So there you go. Coffeetivity.com is the website of the week.
Okay. Let us take a break, and we'll be right back in just a moment. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2. More Tech Talk right after this.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
Application and software developers shape our world. Those who design and build these systems are the leaders we follow. The School of Computer Information Systems at Stratford University's Tyson's Corner or Woodbridge campus offers programs with a real-world, hands-on education. In fact, many of today's Stratford IT grads are working in their chosen field. Make it work for you. Stratford University. Get working. Check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu. A rewarding future as a holistic caregiver or nurse practitioner. Combining the art of caring with the human science makes nursing today's breakout field. Stratford University's School of Nursing at the Tysons Corner or Woodbridge campus offers a patient-centered approach with valuable core clinical training. Stratford provides a real-world education in nursing. In fact, many of today's Stratford nursing grads are working in their chosen fields. Make it work for you. Get working. Check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We're in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. Mobile phones are making cash obsolete in Africa.
Mm-hmm.
Here's a case where a developing country is actually leapfrogging the developing countries. When Burkhard Dahir, he's, of course, in Somali, rolls into a gas station to fill his tank, he doesn't even get out of his car. He pushes a few buttons on his cell phone, and with seconds, he's paid for the fuel. No credit card, no cash. With the same quick keystrokes on his phone, he pays for virtually everything. If he needs groceries at the supermarket, pays for them with his cell phone. Needs a few oranges at the market stall, pays for them with his cell phone. He needs a shoe shine. Pays for it with his cell phone. A cup of sweet tea from the cafe. Pays for it with his cell phone. He's in one of Africa's poorest countries where the illiteracy rate is high and where traditional banks are almost non-existent. Yet, a mobile revolution has created an informal electronic banking system with more efficiency and convenience than anything in developed countries. In the cities of Somaliland, the future's arrived. Cash is disappearing. Credit cards are unnecessary. Daily shopping is speedy and digital. Almost every merchant and even hawkers on the street accept payment by cell phone. It's an innovation that could transform the continent. And Africa's already leading the world in the use of mobile money, and its growth is accelerating. Countries such as Kenya, Tanzania, Uganda all have mobile money accounts, and it's becoming more widespread. More than 17 million Kenyans, two-thirds of the adult population, are using mobile money services, mainly to transfer money from family members or business partners at distant locations. Most transactions in Somalia are on ZAAD, Z-A-A-D, a service of the biggest mobile phone company, Telesom. A survey found last year the average customer made 34 transactions per month. Aden Abokar says, I don't even carry money anymore. Haven't seen cash for a long time. Now, this is what happened. Subscribers occasionally send in a lump sum payment to Telesom, and then they use this balance to pay merchants digitally. So what happened is they dial a three-digit number. To make a purchase, they dial a three-digit number and enter a four-digit PIN, which is their PIN number, and then they enter the merchant's ZAD number. So the merchant has his particular ZAD number, you know, at the thing. They enter the merchant's ZAD number. A second later, the merchant gets a text message saying that the money's been transferred. The person who paid it gets a text message in a stunt. It just takes seconds. So even somebody who does shoe shine can have their ZAD number there. They don't have to carry money. This has actually made crime go down because you know, people aren't carrying money anymore.
Are there any possible methods of fraud involving this process?
I'm certain that there would be, but they're probably less prolific than they are with credit cards.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, credit cards are, you know, it's because the thing is, you actually have to have the cell phone. It's not you can't access it with somebody else's cell phone. You actually have to have the physical device.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I suppose the fraud would be you'd have to steal somebody's
cell phone,
and then you'd have to have their PIN number. The Coca-Cola branch in Somaliland is the only cashless Coca-Cola company in Africa. 80% of its sales to retail distributions are now done through ZAD. Now, many companies even pay their salaries using ZAD transfers.
Wow.
Now, how this thing actually got started is there were a lot of people who left Somaliland to work around the world. And then they would transfer payments back to their family. And they found out that the easiest way to transfer payments back to the country was with this telephone cash. So that's how it really got started. And then people realized that they could use it for everything. The mobile money system grew out of Somalia's heavily dependence on remittances from Somalis who work abroad. About 1 billion are transferred back annually. So here's a case. I think this is a better system that we have. I'd love to be able to just pay stuff with my with my cell phone, not have to worry about credit cards or anything. Mm-hmm. So it's a great idea. And one of these days, the U.S. is going to catch up with Somalia and Africa as far as cash payments using the cell phone.
Amazing.
DARPA's been doing some interesting thing with robotics. They have the Virtual Robotics Challenge, which was a five-day qualification event in which 26 teams from around the world directed a humanoid robot to accomplish very difficult tasks with no human intervention, like picking up and attaching a garden hose, climbing up a ladder. These were difficult things, and they want to basically get robots that can do things in the battlefield.
Mm-hmm.
And it will save lives. Now, the seven advanced teams are earning funding, and they're earning the right to use the government-provided robot, which is a 5'10", 240-pound Boston Dynamics-built Atlas, which is the next phase of DRC. Now, if you notice, I'll hold this up. There's a picture of this, Jim, on our show outline at the bottom of page 9.
Our viewers on the Home and Garden Network.
Hold that up to the home. Yeah, they got that. Yeah,
yeah,
got
they
that.
Can see
okay.
That now.
Oh, yeah,
and it's a nice black and white photo, so you can see it in great detail.
Yeah, it's very good. Now the interesting thing, the people that won this contest are going to be able to actually do it in their own. Now DARPA used are going to actually be able to work with the actual robot, the physical robot, to get this stuff done. Now, this last challenge was all virtual. They actually used software to simulate what they could do, and those that won the simulation contest could do it physically. They used simulation software, Gazebo, which DARPA has funded, and this actually is open source software. It's available for anybody to download. It runs on either Linux or Ubuntu only now, although Windows X and Windows versions are coming. This was a fully developed open source software, and then people can use that, and DARPA's been developing that. Gazebo predates DRC, the DARPA Robotics Challenge, as what we call the Open Source Robotics Foundation project. DARPA looked at the Open Source Robotics Project, and they gave them $6 million of funding a few years ago, and that was enough for the group, the foundation, to hire 10 programmers and really develop it. And they did. It's really become a very robust open source tool for developing robotics. So those of you that are interested in doing this, see DARPA's got this interesting thing. They're able to work on interesting projects but still keep them open source. See, mm-hmm. like the internet was open source. And then TCP/IP. So I just love the way they're doing this. You can download Gazebo, the open source robotic software, by going to gazebosim.org. 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 And the Open Source Robotics Foundation website, which I just love the work they're doing, that would be osrfoundation.org. osrfoundation.org. This is another very innovative project, and probably the long-term value of this DARPA project will be the Gazebo software, which is going to be an enabler for some very advanced stuff. Listen, Tech Talk is over so quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Tell you, we love all your emails. Email us at techtalk@stratford.edu. Make certain to go to stratford.edu website. Take a look at all of our programs there and tell them that you heard about them on Tech Talk. Make certain to go for the podcast by going to techtalkonline.com or going to Apple iTunes and downloading the podcast.
And if you missed part of the show or would like to listen again, we replay at 6 o'clock this afternoon right here on Federal News Radio. See you next week.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program. WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWT-FM HD2 Manassas. This is Federal News Radio, on the air at 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com. The only radio station in the world dedicated to serving the federal executive and government contractor. It's our mission to provide news and information that helps federal managers do their job better and help facilitate the business of government. Federal News Radio talks to the people who make government work to build a sense of federal community, discuss best practices, and explore lessons learned. Every weekday from 6 AM to 7 PM, Federal News News Radio interviews federal newsmakers one-on-one to explain how their news affects agencies and contractors. The Washington, D.C. home of Navy athletics, nights and weekends, WFED broadcasts all the action of the Navy midshipmen, George Washington Colonials, American University Eagles, Washington Nationals, and the Washington Capitals. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
And we do have baseball on the radio for you today. The Nats against the Mets at Citi Field. Game coverage starts at 12:30, first pitch at 1:10 right here on Federal News Radio. The weather forecast for today, it is going to be a lot of sunshine in the morning, maybe showers and thunderstorms later on today. Highs near 90, right now 77 outside our studios in Northwest at 10 a.m.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does